This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I've been talking about the circumstances involving Tyler Skaggs' death, the autopsy revealing it was an accidental overdose, fentanyl, oxycodone, alcohol, a mixture of those. And just one more part of the statement I'll read again. We were shocked to learn that it may involve an employee of the Los Angeles Angels. We will not rest until we learn the truth about how Tyler came into possession of those narcotics. This could get ugly, in a sense, because of the Angels' involvement. And this is a grieving family, so I understand that they're hurt. I can't imagine the pain they must feel. But there's a definition of blame I really like. Somebody did a psychological paper. I forget where it comes from exactly, but I remember it sticking out to me. And the definition would be blame is a way to discharge pain and discomfort, right? It's like why you see whenever there's a loss for a sports team and all of a sudden the fans after every loss for the sports team feel the need to say the coach has to go. I mean, there may be circumstances where the coach has to go, and then there may be circumstances where the fans are just looking for someone to blame. Discharge of pain and discomfort. And that's what this statement from the Skaggs family seems like to me, is that they're looking for someone to blame for Tyler Skaggs' death other than Tyler Skaggs himself. And unfortunately, I would surmise, and again, you never know, so I will wait until I have all of the information, but I would surmise that this is something, he was an active participant in it, and probably not for the first time. So it sucks that they're going through that, but I don't think it would behoove anyone for them to be trying to find someone else responsible for Skaggs' actions. And that's led to a discussion on addiction. And again, I don't know Tyler Skaggs' circumstances. I don't know. I mean, it could be a one-time thing. I generally don't think people who are mixing fentanyl, oxycodone, and alcohol are doing it for the first time. Especially when fentanyl is like way stronger than morphine. So just being in possession of that is a red flag, I think. Oxycodone is much more commonly used, but is also a drug that is abused. And alcohol is the most widely abused drug that there is. And my base statement on that is, if it was an addiction problem, no one chooses to be an addict. But how you respond to being an addict is up to you. And ultimately, that's where you see success stories of people who conquered addiction versus the other side, which way too often is tragedy. 855-212-4227, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, brought to you by GEICO. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Patrick in Charlotte. Patrick, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Patrick?
Hey, Robin, love your show. First-time caller. I have a throat problem. I had surgery yesterday, so if I have that, I'm sorry. But totally 100% disagree with anybody who uses the word addiction. It's nothing more than a cop-out and justification. What quote-unquote addiction is, by definition, it's yielding to temptation. I'll ask you one question. Mm-hmm. If you or I had an addiction, we have a family, and someone comes to us with a gun and says, I'm going to blow your wife and your kids away right in front of you unless you quit your so-called addiction, do you think you can choose which what it is to
Hey, Patrick, people have that exact scenario in a sense all the time, and they make the choice that you wouldn't think they make. Because American Psychiatric Association, you talk about a definition. I pulled it up while you were talking. Addiction is a complex condition, a brain disease that is manifested by compulsive substance use despite harmful consequence. So let me give you your choice scenario that you just laid out. If someone told you, or anyone, do you think anyone would choose this? You will lose your family, your money, and your life. If you choose to continue using that substance, you would think it would just be easy to stop using that substance, yet people still do, despite knowing they might lose their family, their job, or their life. That is addiction. No one chooses that.
I politely disagree, and that's okay, no big deal, but I'll just leave you with this, and I'll get off the air. What it truly is, sir, and for everyone listening, it's yielding the temptation to Satan and his demons, which no one wants to acknowledge, unless those who know the truth. And it's just a cop-out and a justification.
I appreciate the call, but if you're going to blame Satan, I mean, really, that's that you think that's the thing that's taking the argument? That's a cop-out to me. Sorry, blaming Satan is a cop-out to me. Mike in Fort Worth, Texas. Mike, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, Robin, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
We miss you laugh today. I know we're talking about a sad story, but...
We'll laugh later. I mean, I'm able to switch topics and tones, man. I just felt like if I was covering this story before when it happened, and again, I was very uncomfortable the day after the whole, you know what I mean? When all those numbers were aligning and people were like, oh, it's such a great way to honor him. I was like, somebody still died here. And in the back of my mind, I kind of knew. I didn't say it out loud because, I want to wait until it's actually confirmed. But I expected this to be the result of the autopsy, something along those lines. Yeah.
Right. He's in his prime. I mean, he's not, at that age. But my point is, like you said, that you open the door with alcohol because that's how people with heroin addiction, that's how they get the stick needle in their arms and stuff, you know what I mean? Because that's how you open the door. I was watching a show on HBO. 85% of the crimes that's committed is under the influence of alcohol. You see what I'm saying?
It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
And then what's funny is you're talking about addiction. It's a self-control because you have people get locked up for 3-4 years for crimes and stuff, and they were addicted with crack, heroin, cocaine, and they come out. They're clean for 3 years. They come out and choose to do it again. You see?
It should be treated like a medical condition, not a crime. And countries that do that see much better results, right? That's just, it's my opinion, but I also think the facts bear that out. It's always easy for somebody who's not struggling with that to say. And I'm not saying that anyone who's dealing with an addiction isn't individually responsible. They all are. All of us are individually responsible. I'm just not going to blame them for having an addiction. How they respond to having an addiction is what's important. Just like how any of us respond to the things that happen to us, not the things that we choose to happen. And from my understanding, in counseling, in therapy, in rehab, in all that stuff, in group meetings, a lot of that practice is not only talking through to get to the underlying issues, because generally addiction is a manifestation of an underlying issue, but also to learn how to, or techniques to manage avoiding the first pill, the first hit, the first sip, any of that, because that's the one that can be controlled versus what happens after, which is the biochemical reaction that people can't control. It's that first one that they can control. Ernesto in Miami. Ernesto, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Ernesto?
Hey, Robin, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to mention two things. The first thing is I completely agree with you that addiction is not something that you choose. And the reason why I say that is not too long ago, I had a back pain, really severe back pain. I went to the hospital, was prescribed oxycodone for it. And they gave me a heavy dose for like 7 days. I'm a fairly big guy. And after that, I felt so bad with the withdrawal that the only thing that my body was telling me was like, you need more, you need more, you need more. And it's bad because, you know, those are painkillers and you think they're there to help you. But if you really let it get to you, it will harm you and damage you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, I mean, addiction, again, it's being able to choose. I have a cousin of mine that he's addicted to drugs and he chooses over and over and over again to continue doing drugs. And he has a wife and four kids and doesn't help them.
It ruins lives.
It ruins lives, and nobody chooses that.
Who would choose? I mean, if you just think about it logically, who would choose? Like, behind door number one is a normal life, and behind door number two is pain, sadness, and depression. You know, like, nobody is going to choose door number two. Now, taking the first sip or the first hit or the first pill is a choice, and learning to manage that, I think, is one of the things that people do in addiction treatment. But having the addiction itself is not a choice. I think people have a lot of trouble with nuance and degrees and gray areas and the like, and this is, I think, a topic that lives there. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. I'll take a few more of your calls because I appreciate the feedback and the interaction, and then we'll move on to more germane sports news as far as it goes to Ezekiel Elliott battling with Jerry Jones. And I want to talk about Shaq and Kobe's thing from this week, plus the idea of the NFL becoming flag football at some point in time. But a lot of you have wanted to weigh in, so I'll give you one more chance to have this discussion as it relates to the autopsy report regarding Tyler Skaggs. 855-212-4227. It is the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, CBS Sports Radio. I'll take a few more of your calls on the Tyler Skaggs situation. Autopsy revealing fentanyl, oxycodone, alcohol responsible for his death, accidental overdose. His family put out a statement saying they wanted to get to the bottom of how he was supplied the drugs and that, to their surprise, it may have involved an Angels employee. I understand they're hurting, but to me, it seems like they're looking for someone to blame other than Tyler for what happened here. And I don't feel any differently about Tyler Skaggs. I'm not judging him. People go through real things, but ultimately, he's also responsible for what happened to him. 855-212-4227. Let's go to Steve in Maine. Steve, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, good morning, Robin. First of all, my heart goes out to the family of Tyler Skaggs. A couple points I want to make. First, I hear a lot of callers, you know, they got opinions on what addiction is and this and that. You know, some of us, as in my situation, I went through an injury. My doctor put me on pain meds, and the next thing I knew, I couldn't function without the meds in my system.
Mm-hmm.
I just had to use them day to day to get by. Second, I can totally see how somebody, it's hard for people to ask for help because the way society looks down on people that are using, you know, they tend to make people feel like a piece of crap, as if you're almost like a junkie when you ask for help. And I couldn't even imagine what an athlete that's making millions and has so much to lose must go through, even considering the asking for help.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's tough. That's, I think, probably the hardest part is the self-realization and taking that leap, if you will. But I think that's the most important thing. That's the most important thing. Again, you can't control what happens to you. You can control how you deal with what happens to you. Kevin in Reno, Nevada. Kevin, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, I just want to say, first of all, thank you for even talking about this issue and bringing awareness. It's a very big issue, probably more so than a lot of Americans think. I also want to say to the caller that said this was a cop-out, he's obviously pretty ignorant and doesn't know really what he's talking about, because this literally rewires your brain to where everything outside of your life, your family, your friends, your job, doesn't matter, and the drugs become the gold. Like, that is all you really need. This is coming from an addict for the past 4 or 5 years. when you have the drugs, everything else in life seems non-important, and it is really a disease. It should be almost treated as seriously as maybe cancer or some other diseases in this country, because it, although you can't see it, it is definitely in your head. There were times when I didn't have stuff and I had to go to work in 30 minutes and I would call in sick because I don't want to go through 8 hours of hell. So it should be treated very importantly in this country. And then second of all, I just want to say maybe the angels, I hear a lot of people calling in and saying, yeah, I got an injury and my doctor prescribed me this and then that's how I got hooked. And I mean, that's how I got hooked. But with a professional baseball team, it might be just as easy as saying, hey, you got to pitch in 4 days. Here's this oxycodone. Or, hey, you got to pitch tomorrow. Here's this. And just for a little reference, an oxycodone is 6 times stronger than just a little Vicodin. So,
yeah, the one that strikes me is the fentanyl. And I hope you're doing better, man. But the fentanyl is that, like, I don't know why. I mean, if I don't know why a team would be in possession of that. So that goes beyond oxycodone. I don't know what goes on with team doctors in the locker room, but that's a far more, you know, you or I, like you mentioned, could be prescribed that. Fentanyl is, from my understanding, that's the kind of thing used with like people who are terminally ill or dealing with like excruciating pain to ease that. That's another level. And that would be, I guess, the concern is why someone would be in possession of that particular substance. We've seen, again, I referenced this earlier, we've seen that put a lot of people on the ground. But I also am a little uncomfortable with the notion of, you know, the blaming someone else or finding someone else and holding them responsible for what happened. But you don't want that around the players as part of the culture. That's clear. Simon in Dallas. Simon, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, what's up, bro? Love the show, man.
Thank you.
I have a question. Have you ever been around an addict while he's feeding his addiction, like in their same room?
Yes.
And you still think that it's not a choice? They're not choosing to do that?
No one's choosing to be an addict. They are, I said this before, I mean, this is nuanced, Simon. It's choosing to take the first sip or the first hit or the first pill. Yes, that is a choice at that point in time. And people learn to deal with that and cope with that because the urges are super strong. Some people go through physical withdrawal, as you heard somebody say. Some people's their mind is just so obsessed with it; it's the only thing that can ease their mind. So you learn how to stay away from that. But once that is in your system, they're all bets are off as far as the control level. That's when the control level can go away. But if it were a choice, no one would choose that scenario. Who in the world would choose that scenario? If you're saying,
like your last caller said, when you're in that state of mind, you're not thinking about your wife, your kids, your job. You're not thinking about anything.
Of course, because of the addiction.
Yeah,
not because you're rationally making a decision.
When you're putting something in your body with your own two hands, you're choosing to do it, right?
Again, I just told you the first one is a choice in a sense, but you're so oversimplifying it because you're ignoring all of the circumstances that lead to it happening in the first place and the repeated abuse of it. And, you know, I've seen people who have died from drinking themselves to death. I have seen people who have lost, who have chosen to love their family and their job and whatever and have lost things as a result of an addiction. No one chooses that. That's the issue is with what you're saying.
Well, like I said, I mean, I have plenty of relatives or addicts, and I've been in the room and seen them, and I don't see how somebody's doing it with their own two hands willingly, knowing, and it takes time to do it. It's not a one-second thing.
Does it take so time to have a beer?
You're going through process.
Does it take time to have a beer?
It takes time to walk to wherever you got to go, drive wherever you got to go. So you're in the state of mind of knowing what you're going to do.
Okay, but the way you're painting it is like everyone who's an addict is tying up their arm for a heroin injection or whatever you call it. Alcohol is the most, again, alcohol is the most widely used addiction and drug, period, number one. That doesn't take time. That ain't hard to get. Travis in Fort Worth, Texas. Travis, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, I'm an EMT in Fort Worth, and we see addiction all the time. And we actually use fentanyl in our, you know, pain management for patients and things. So it's not, I don't think it's necessarily all that hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure he actually was using it for pain management because we know, you know, the MLB season is a grind.
But isn't that super strong? Like, that's what I guess would where I would be confused, where fentanyl would actually be prescribed. Because from my understanding, it's more prescribed for really serious things rather than what we typically know of, like oxycodone, oxycontin, and all that stuff being prescribed, Percocet, for more run-of-the-mill injuries, if you will.
Well, I mean, it's not extremely, they don't use it for super heavy pain. I guess we've used it for, you know, 4 out of 10 pain. It's because it's really easy for pain management, and it's really easy to do the math to dilute it down and actually get it into somebody's system. But he was probably using it clear back in college, and it just continued and continued and continued. And because he's probably built up an immunity to the other more simple pain medications, he's probably up to fentanyl because that's all that would work at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, that tends to be a pattern. Again, I don't know, and I won't say I know, but generally, somebody who's having a cocktail like that with alcohol and oxycodone and fentanyl, that's not their first time around the block. Joey in Texas. Joey, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Joey?
Yeah, I just wanted to speak on the fact that I don't think he probably knew that he had fentanyl or not laced into his oxy. Whether it was himself or an Angels employee that was getting him the pills, these guys that are out here making these pills illegally are using these pill presses, and not all the time are they being the most responsible pill makers, right? So He could have been making these oxy pills and somehow some residual type of residual from fentanyl, from whether he might have made some NDAs known as X with fentanyl laced in it. Could have been it too. He could have thought that he was just taking oxy by itself. But unfortunately, too, that these pill makers, they'll put in fentanyl into these drugs. It is so highly addictive so that they can have the user keep coming over and over and over again.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know if he knew exactly what he was taking necessarily. I think he knew he was taking something. I also don't know. I won't pretend to know the street market drug stuff that's going on. But also doctors are prescribing these things, too. That's how most people get them at first. So I'm not sure of all that. But, you know, I'm not sure of anything, really. But I do, again, surmise that this was not an isolated incident, I'm sure. All right, last one on this. David in Texas. David, you're up here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, David?
Hey, first time caller. I just wanted to comment on the issue about the person that gave him the drugs. Mm-hmm. I understand he's under investigation or something like that, whoever it is.
Well, the family says they're going to find out who supplied him with the drugs. That was what is in their statement. It's part of the reason I talked about this topic, because the tone of that statement seemed like a family that was grieving and in pain. I understand that, but that was also maybe looking for someone to blame for, you know, their son's own actions.
Okay, because the thing I was going to say is not making light of his death or anything, but just because this guy is like a famous baseball player, I mean, they have families just like yours and mine. And
sure.
People die over overdoses every day. Only thing they do is they slap a death thing on his toe and they call it a day. Nobody tries to investigate, you know, the average person's death or anything. But just because this guy was a big-time star, I don't think that's right for everybody.
You know, David, we could get into that. That's a whole different topic. This is a story because he was a baseball player. I don't think he's the most famous baseball player in the world, obviously. But it's a story because he was young and a professional athlete. All professional athletes are individuals and people just like you and I, and this is something that applies to people beyond the pro sports world. But I don't really think it necessarily dovetails topically on this show for us to explore what happens to everyone else in similar circumstances. Just know that people do struggle with similar circumstances, and I hope anyone who is struggling is doing better and get help if you are struggling.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
Okay. Robin Lundberg Show, CBS Sports Radio. Today, starting at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, CBS Sports Network kicks off a day of college football with Indiana battling Ball State, followed by Navy welcoming Holy Cross. Then at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, the Mizzou Tigers take on the Wyoming Cowboys, only on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. You know what I'm tired of talking about? Ezekiel Elliott? I am. Very tired of talking about that. I was tired of talking about Antonio Brown. I think that at least is done for now. Well, he had this thing of, shut up already, we were never friends, with Ben Roethlisberger this week. But in general, what else you want me to say? All right. Has dude's behavior been completely normal? Nah. But hopefully he plays in some games and we get that behind us a little bit, or at least a new plot twist or something. Because the helmet thing I was done talking about. And same thing with the Zeke thing with the Cowboys. What else is there to say? What is going to be said that no one else has said? Jerry Jones keeps talking. Why is Jerry Jones talking? Well, part of it's public negotiations. You think he's saying this stuff by accident? He's just like, oh, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to drop in these little lines about him being fresh for the playoffs. Or Jerry Jones said, we know he can't hold out the whole season because in order to qualify, I think, for the league year, he has to be back by like week 10 or something like that. And Ezekiel Elliott's not in the position Le'Veon Bell was in, right? Like, he can't do what Le'Veon Bell did. Or he'd be risking a lot more because Le'Veon Bell was on a franchise tag. Ezekiel Elliott has 2 years left on his deal. He's going to sit out that whole time? So eventually he's coming back this season, if not before the season. Jerry Jones is trying to make it appear to the public and to Zeke that, yeah, we need you, but we don't need you that much. Now, if the report was true that this dispute was between the salaries of, Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley, then it's ridiculously petty and ego-driven. Because that should get done. There's no reason that difference should be holding up a contract here other than the egos of a negotiation. What struck me about this story when it initially happened was the circumstances around it, because I almost always side with players in the NFL. I think, especially like this week, we've seen, you know, Andrew Luck, Rob Gronkowski, right? Like, just a reminder of the toll that sport can take on the human body. So for players to want to maximize their earning power while they're playing it, I understand. And their only leverage is their ability. You know, and the only way to flex that leverage is to withhold said ability. So that's what Ezekiel Elliott is doing. And in almost all circumstances, I totally get it. In his, it's a little, it takes a little nerve to do it in his situation simply because of all the off-the-field stuff he was involved in and how the Cowboys had his back in that regard. Maybe they only had his back because they saw the value he provided to the team. Nevertheless, they did. And that, I think, led to some of the ugly nature of all this, because Jerry Jones probably felt betrayed in a sense. And, you know, you've heard Jerry Jones say, what's he going to do if we give him another contract? Just not honor that contract. And the immediate pushback on that has been, well, teams don't honor their contracts. Technically, that's not true. The contracts are what stink, right? The contract says, the contract requires the full commitment of the player. It does not require the full commitment of the team. That is what is signed. That is what's in the contract. That's why NFL players should fight for fully guaranteed deals when the CBA is up. They should be fighting for fully guaranteed deals because that's BS. But as is, they still would be technically honoring the contract, even if they're tearing it up and throwing it in the garbage, because the contract says they can do that. Doesn't say it for the player. And that's why the players continue to be taken advantage of at the NFL level. But in Zeke's case, you know, it just seemed a little curious to me from the beginning because he just was involved in that security guard incident. But ultimately, this is now a negotiation playing out in public. And the quotes from Jerry Jones tell you as much. So where's the next place that the negotiation, if it doesn't get done before the season, will go? To the field. The negotiation will go to the field. And in that instance, the question becomes who has more to lose, leverage-wise. I mean, if the Cowboys lose a few games, all of a sudden, the need for Ezekiel Elliott becomes greater. Just like what happened with Emmitt Smith, I think he held out. They missed two games. And all of a sudden was back. On the flip side, Ezekiel Elliott doesn't play, and the Cowboys do pretty well. All of a sudden, he's not looking so great, especially if Tony Pollard is showing out. So Zeke's leverage could fall apart rather quickly. Ego always gets involved in this stuff, and that gets tiresome. I also think what gets involved is where we're at in the sports calendar year and each little detail, you know, becoming a new headline. I'm kind of done with it, but it's certainly a big overarching topic of the NFL season. I guess the question I would ask now is, who has more to lose if Ezekiel Elliott misses time this season? Him or the Cowboys? 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. Dave in Tucson, Arizona. Dave, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Dave?
Yeah, I'm a pretty knowledgeable football guy and literally Jet fan and, you know, like the Family Guy. The minute the, you know, season starts, kickoff against Buffalo. Okay, set up your golf plans. Patriots, go to the playoffs. I mean, the bottom line with the Cowboys, when Jerry Jones took over as GM, got rid of Jimmy Johnson, the team's been terrible. And this is going to happen this season. Ezekiel Elliott, even though I'm a Jet guy, I've gone to a lot of Giant games. I even was there a few years ago, Dallas against the Giants. And, of course, Odell decided to sit that one out, which really hurt my son's feelings, flying in and, from the Navy, no less, and coming to Fort Worth, Texas, Dallas. All I got to say is, the guy's a great athlete, man. And if they can't figure this out, that if he's on the freaking playing field, they win games. And if he's not on the field, they lose games. Jerry Jones is a joke to say, oh, we'll have a playoff run. Dude, you got to win ball games. And the Giants, the Eagles, and, you know, and possibly even the Redskins, look out there, Dallas fans. You don't get it. Tell Jerry Jones to just be a silent owner. Get a football guy, and you'll have a good team. But at this point, because I'm a New Yorker, hey, Jerry Jones, stay there, man. Keep making these decisions, you and your sons. You're losers. Dallas, you're not America's team. You're America's joke. Because you know what? It's Labor Day weekend. Of course, Yankees, Mets in a World Series. How many people would hate that? And it's baseball season, and football season, be Patriots and the Rams and Kansas City. We know what's going to happen. There's only a couple of six to eight teams with the genius minds and the, you know, Belichick tree. But great topic. You know, there's a big, we're in Arizona here and big Dallas contingent. You go to a Cardinal game and there's more, half and more Cowboy fans, you know, root for the American team. Almost like Raider Nation that travels decently.
Well, look, there's Cowboys fans everywhere. There's Cowboys fans in New Jersey, a lot of them. you know, they popped up once the Cowboys started getting good again, like gremlins who get wet after midnight, like boop, boop, boop. All these Cowboys fans coming out of nowhere. I didn't know existed. But yeah, I mean, like the Cowboys have been pretty good, though. Let's not like front. It's not like they've been bad as of late. I'm not saying that Jerry Jones is responsible for that or deserves credit for any of those moves directly, but the Cowboys have been fairly good, and I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that they could win a few games without Ezekiel Elliott and his leverage could fall apart. Now, the opposite could happen, and it could ruin their season. So that's the question. Who has more to lose if he misses time, Zeke or the Cowboys? 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. Brian in McKinney, Texas. Brian, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, bud. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, man.
Hey, Jerry was on a local station out here yesterday, and he had some really good points. He was being pretty real about the whole situation, but he was essentially saying that there's only been one running back that's had topped out money that was a rushing title holder, and that was Emmitt Smith that won a Super Bowl. So he went on to say, we've had Zeke now for a few years, and we really haven't come that close to tasting the Super Bowl. So he was saying having a max rushing leader for a running back, it's great and it's a good piece, he said, but it's definitely not the main ingredient for a Super Bowl. So he said that, you know, he's busy building other pieces to try and put this thing together, and that's why he's not going to focus as hard on Zeke. And then I also think that with Zeke, man, his lifestyle is going to come back to really hurt him just for the fact that the dude's probably blowing through money with his partying and stuff like that. So if he can't set out more than 8 games because he's going to lose a lot of money. But also, if he even does set out more than 8 games, if they decide to fine him, he's actually almost going to owe the Cowboys money just to come back and play 8 games. So I think it's a lose-lose for Zeke if you're talking about that, just for the stances that he has and what he sets to lose. But the Cowboys are also, they're pretty stacked all around as far as offense goes, and the defense is pretty good as well. So I think that they're going to be able to survive and manage without him. Better than he's going to be able to survive without that money in the Cowboys.
Well, I don't know his monetary situation, so I'm not going to pretend to speculate that. I have zero idea. I do know that he's been involved in some off-the-field stuff that would have made me a little hesitant to just give him a huge deal in the first place, and I understand why the Cowboys might be miffed, considering they feel like they've had his back. I do agree he could stand to lose if they perform well without him, and I think that's a lot more possible than people are giving it credit for, especially if Pollard is pretty good. So that leads, again, to the question, who has more to lose if Zeke doesn't play, the Cowboys or Zeke himself? 855-212-4227, at Robin Lundberg on Twitter. It is the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here on CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.